Hello, how we doing? It's time. It is Gas House Gang time with Kevin Wheeler. I'm Tom Ackerman. Hey, look at this. Michigan's beating Alabama 16-0. My goodness. Kirk Herbstreit must be having a fit.
They don't belong on the same field.
They are being outclassed by Michigan. My gosh, what the heck has happened?
I mean, it's very clear that, you know, Alabama had no business being in this game, Tom.
No, they didn't. They don't belong on the same field. I don't even know what they're doing in a bowl game. They should have called it a while ago. Welcome, everybody. That's the kind of mood we're in. It's New Year's Eve. We're having a good time. I haven't even had a cocktail yet.
Time
in. Yep.
You waiting till 1 p.m.?
Well, I'm in the office. We do have a refrigerator that still has some sort of spiked iced tea beverage in there, but I'm not going to go get that one. No, it's great to be with you. It's a great day. I mean, I know some people will be catching this later, but for those of you watching us live, this is a great sports run here the next 2 days. And today in particular, just a quick rundown. You've got bowl games going on right now. Alabama, Michigan are playing right now. You have the Billikens are going to play here. We're going to get off by 12:45 or before that, so you can get to the pregame on KMOX for SLU at Fordham. They're not sticking around for the ball drop, I don't believe, but they're hoping to see some drop into the net, I should say. Then at 2, Illinois plays South Carolina in the Citrus Bowl, the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, which I find an interesting combination. Then you have at 4 o'clock, the Winter Classic. The Blues are playing the Blackhawks at Wrigley Field. Oh, at 6:30, Penn State, Boise State. Oh, 3 more playoff games tomorrow. I mean, Kevin, it's a really good time to be a sports
fan. It's pretty awesome, man. I know I'm not as excited about today's games as I will. Well, I mean, I'm excited about Penn State, Boise State. I still have a hard time getting fired up for other bowl games. Not that they don't matter. They just matter to differing degrees depending on who your fan base is, right? I think this game, for example, means a lot more for Illinois than, say, the Pop-Tart Bowl did to Miami, as an example, just considering what was expected and all of that coming into the year. But I'm looking forward to talking a bit more about these college football playoff games. I know this is just foreshadowing for the later on in the show, Tom, but I'm kind of like, man, on the Winter Classic stuff now. I mean, it's just because they've done it so many times. I know it's Wrigley Field and all that, but I mean, it's not that it's bad. I want to be clear. I don't hate it. It doesn't make me mad. It's just that, okay, how many times are we going to do this and pretend that every time is special?
Well, yeah, I hear you. I'm great with switching up the topics, by the way, and talking about whatever we want. I mean, when it comes to the Winter Classic, I still hang on Busch Stadium. It was novel. It was amazing. It was St. Louis. I thought even the day before was as impressive, where they almost packed that stadium completely
for practice
for an alumni game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was super cool.
But it's cool if it's in your town and you're a part of it. I don't think it's as cool as a TV event anymore, because it's not unique anymore.
Maybe if they didn't play the Blackhawks again and they played a different team.
How are the Blackhawks getting these classic games outdoors when they're the worst team in the league?
They're the Alabama of Winter Classics. I mean, they just
don't belong on the ice.
they get so many Winter Classic games. Why is that? I don't understand.
Well,
it's
an Original Six franchise, so it's a big following, but it's been a long time since they've been worth watching.
Yeah. Now watch them beat the Blues up.
I know.
After we say all that.
After we talk.
But, you know, the Blues are just, they are what they are. They're a 500 team. I'd love to see them kind of recapture some of the magic. But as we talked about yesterday, I don't know that that's coming anytime soon. I mean, their salary cap structure is what it is. I think you're basically leaning on young players blossoming, kind of like what the Cardinals are doing, although the Blues are a step ahead.
Yeah, I mean, they're further along. I'm not sure that they're closer to getting to be good, because you just nailed it, Tom. This is not about whether I like their young players or not, because there's some talent there, man. There's some guys that can be really good. It's not that I don't think that long term you can't develop even more guys. You know, some of their guys in the farm system are doing okay, and they're on the rise as prospects. But the difference between the Blues and the Cardinals is, if the Cardinals decide to spend next year, they can. And the Blues can't just decide that, because they're capped out. And, you know, you've got a lot of contracts that you're just going to have to wait out And I'm not, look, I'm not trying to blame anybody. You know, these deals probably weren't as problematic at the time they were signed as they look like now. But, you know, when you're locked in on four or five contracts that you'd love to get away from, and the only way you're going to get away from them is to trade them to someone else for their version of that contract, right? Like, who's going to eat a $7 million contract for a player you don't want and give you something in return, or just take the contract, right? I mean, you can give up a pick to get someone to take a contract, but boy, what kind of pick and how much are you willing to give up just to get someone to take a deal? It's tough, man. The NHL, I think they've got to figure some stuff out. I know that, you know, their structure is not a bad one inherently, but when nobody has the room to maneuver, it's not great for the league, because it's going to keep teams that are in the middle stuck in the middle. It's going to keep the teams at the top that have locked people up good for a long period of time. And if you're a rebuilding team, you just have to luck into one of those elite draft talents that can maybe be a franchise-changing player. It's really a tough spot for the league.
And it doesn't seem fair in baseball that only a handful of teams are able to sign Juan Soto, that only a handful of teams are able to have these inflated payrolls, Dodgers, Yankees, you know, Mets, et cetera. But on the other hand, that's the reason the Cardinals are doing all of this. And it doesn't always guarantee that you're going to win anyway. I mean, the Dodgers didn't do anything. They won half a World Series in 2020. Before that, they hadn't won since 88. They win the one last year. But buying, just ask the Mets. It doesn't guarantee you anything. And, you know, occasionally the Arizona Diamondbacks get into the World Series. We haven't had a repeat world champion since the Yankees did it in 2000.
Yeah, I think there are two problems with this. I mean, first of all, we're you know, a lot of people around baseball are freaking out about a problem that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We haven't seen a dynasty. We haven't seen it since the 90s. And even then, before the 90s, when was the one before that? The 60s?
Right. I think
the
80s just, like,
had no dynasties. The 80s
I
had
get
no
the other side of it. Like, why? I mean, I'm talking myself out of my own argument, but, you know, you look at the Dodgers lineup and you're like, this just isn't fair. I mean,
how many times have we done that, though? Like, if you looked at opening day last year and thought, man, the Braves are going to walk away with the National League.
Right.
Look at that team. It doesn't always play that way. The Yankees have outspent Major League Baseball for 30 years, 40 years. I mean, George Steinbrenner was throwing around money in the 70s before anybody else was. How many World Series champions do they have since the late 90s?
Yeah.
One. And that was 15 years ago. So I agree that it's something to keep an eye on. But the key to all of this is just better revenue sharing. Get those big owners who are making $700-800 million a year in revenue and convince them that they need to work better with their business partners, and then convince the Pirates and the Marlins and the A's and the teams at the bottom who could easily spend 50 to 80 million more on their payrolls, easily, just based on TV money alone. Forget selling a ticket. Based on TV money alone, those teams could raise their payrolls 70 or 80 million dollars. Does that mean they're going to win a World Series? No, but you know what it does? It makes it tougher. They bring some more talent in, which is less talent for the other guys to accumulate. So it gets spread out a little bit more. So we got to convince the deadbeats to stop deadbeating, and we got to convince the rich guys to share. And I guess we could look at the real world and recognize how difficult an argument that is to make to really, really wealthy dudes, billionaires, and say, hey, guys, you need to share more. You need to take care of each other. Because what they're going to do, here's what Major League Baseball is going to do. They're going to turn around and they're going to try to make this a players' union problem. They're going to say, we need a salary cap. No, you don't. You need better revenue sharing, because the salary cap doesn't do what people think it does. People act like a salary cap leads to parity, but it doesn't. Name a sports league that has parity with a salary cap.
College football will eventually.
It doesn't have a cap.
Like, no, I said it will.
The NFL has a cap. They have no parity. It's a dynasty league. The dynasty's changed, but we're in the middle of the Chiefs dynasty right now.
Yeah.
Before that, it was a 20-year Patriots dynasty. And before that, it was the Cowboys and the 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. It's not the cap does not create parity. The only thing that creates randomness in the NFL is a short schedule. It's only 17 games compared to 162, or compared to 82 in hockey, and a playoff game is a one and out. It's not like you have to go win a 7-game series. So the NFL's whatever competitiveness is there is entirely about the schedule. Because, Tom, if you flip 3 games in the NFL, that's a big difference. That's an 8-7 team, or a 9-8 team turning into a 12-5 team. That's a big difference. 3 games in baseball is nothing. It's literally nothing. If you're a 500 team and you win 3 more games, you're still just where the Cardinals were last year. And that's not good enough. And I think it's really fascinating that we think that caps create that. Is the NBA full of parity? Is it a competitive, balanced league where everybody has a chance? That league is just dynasty after dynasty after dynasty going back to the 80s.
Yeah.
Going back to the Celtics and Lakers. And then after that, you had a little run from the Pistons. And then you're back to the Celtics. And then you had the LeBron dynasty, basically, because it was Miami, Cleveland, and LA with him. You had the Spurs dynasty, the Golden State Warriors dynasty. It never stops. So why do we think that a cap is going to make parity or create competitive balance when it hasn't in any sport that a cap exists in?
This is the Gas House Gang from KMOX with Kevin Wheeler. I'm Tom Ackerman. Good comments coming in on what we were just talking about the balance right of power in sports and otherwise. Kevin,
here's
said
the argument, by the way, for Kevin.
Yeah, this is Kevin Blickhan.
This is a really great question, and this is at the root of what Rob Manfred has to do.
He says the owners
do it because it's going to make the league more sustainable long term. Because you don't want fans in Pittsburgh or eventually now in Vegas or in Tampa. You don't want fans in big in these smaller markets to just bail. Because if they do, the whole sport loses. The whole sport loses. You want all of these people to stay engaged. You want all fan bases to stay engaged because your product will then sell more. Because you'll have better ratings, you'll be able to charge more for advertising, you'll sell more tickets in those markets and in other ones. It's for the health of the sport, and those top 5 or 6 teams just want to be greedy. They just want, I don't want to share any of mine. That's what makes the NFL work, Tom, is their revenue sharing. It's that Green Bay has the same revenue as the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable franchise on earth. Yeah, I mean, what are they? Are they behind the Yankees or ahead of them? I think they're ahead of the Yankees. They're crazy important, but the Packers have the same revenue. There's a cap that they both spend to the cap, but they have the ability to spend. If we put a cap in baseball, Tom, where do you think we put it? What number do you think they put it at?
Oh, I don't know.
300?
Yeah, probably.
270, 260, whatever. Yeah. How many teams can even come close to that?
No, very few.
Revenue sharing as the first thing, it doesn't matter.
By the way, for those not watching on a visual medium, the Kevin comment was that the owners would have to decide and promote revenue sharing. They won't, because they decide what's the incentive for rich teams to do that. No,
that's the crux of the question.
So at what point do the billionaires start moving in on college football programs? So Mark Lazary, the former Milwaukee Bucks owner, said that he thinks it's a phenomenal opportunity, that discussions are already underway. Billionaires are talking about buying 51% stakes in college football programs.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen. So those are the things that are going to happen. And look, we see those things now and we think they're crazy, right? We're like, that's an insane idea. That's completely wild. It's completely over the top. But if you do it now, nobody's going to think that 10 years from now. Nobody's going to think that 20 years from now, because the things that we see now, if you look back at the past, we would have thought that was crazy. Use the bowl season as an example, Tom. 20 years ago. How old are you 20 years ago? How old were you in 25 years. How old were you in the year 2000?
25.
I was 29. Do you know how many bowl games there were in that year?
There were a lot.
23.
Mm-hmm.
There's 47 now. If somebody told you in 2000 that there would be 47 bowl games, you'd be like, that's insane. It's ridiculous. Crazy. It doesn't make any sense. We're going to have, losing teams or 500 teams getting rewarded. We would have thought then that it makes no sense. Now it's just normal. It's just the way it is.
I said back in 2000, and Tim Klitsaritz, our producer, can back this up. He's now a news director in Fort Myers, Florida, that at the NBC affiliate there, that we drew up a 16-team tournament for college football. Now, at the time, there was no Power Five, Power Four. There were conferences, and they were a little more even. So what we did is we selected nine conferences. Some don't even exist anymore, but we had nine conferences, and we said, if you win that conference, you're automatically in the field of 16, and then seven at-larges, 16 teams. We have first round at home stadiums, second round at the big bowls, and blah, blah, blah. We're seeing some of that come to fruition now, and it would render some of the bowls useless, but so be it. Well, that's kind of where we are now. But then again, you know, I'm not worried about – I think Missouri beating Iowa is good for Missouri. I mean, sure, they can hang that big banner up in their practice facility or trophy that they won the Music City Bowl. They beat Iowa, a heck of a respected program, and one that they compete against, by the way, for recruits here in St. Louis and beyond, and they win that. That's a good win for Missouri, without a doubt, and it would have been a good win for Iowa.
Yeah, yeah. See, but this is the problem with these bowls, is that the meaning is very specific, right? Like, to me, it's meaningful for Mizzou for the reason you said, because you compete for players with Iowa. You're in the same geographic region. You're competing for the same players. That can help. But like using, you know, again, as a Miami guy, the Pop-Tarts Bowl, that didn't change anything. No recruit is going to decide not to go there because of the Pop-Tarts Bowl. You know, nobody's going to care that you lost that game when your quarterback set out the second half. Like, this is, so the meaning is very, it's got to be searched for. Like, what's the meaning? Gee, Tom, I don't know if you saw the Pop-Tarts Bowl graphic last.
Oh, yeah.
But by the way, they do a great job with promotions and having fun. I give them a lot of credit for the way that they handle that. But like, what's the real meaning for Alabama in this game against Michigan? That's a team.
Respectability for Michigan.
Right. So it means more to Michigan than it does to Alabama. For Alabama, it's just a consolation prize. They expect to be a contender for the national championship every year. So as soon as that's not the case, everything's a letdown. Now, Michigan had a down year. Michigan would love to reassert themselves here and maybe that does help them, but this is kind of the nature of having too many bowl games. Now, I will say this, Tom, if you cut the bowl games in half, well, the games are all going to be better because you're not going to have to look at 6-6 teams like Washington in a bowl game. Washington 6-6. Mm. Why should you be rewarded for that? Well, we get it because people want to sell tickets to games and they want more than that, because these stadiums are usually half empty anyway. But what it is it's television programming. And look, I get it. It's about money, right? Because those TV networks, they pay a lot of money to college, to the NCAA, but not directly to the NCAA, but, you know, to the college, to the big conferences and all that. They have these big TV contracts, and that's where most of the money comes from. So that's why they do it. We all get it. But that doesn't mean that all of these games mean something.
It just means that
they're an entertainment product.
I'll tell you a little secret about this game, that Indiana fans are secretly rooting for Michigan, even though they hate Michigan to their core. Michigan winning, Ohio State winning, Notre Dame winning,
maybe Penn State. Are all,
it gives Indiana a little street cred because Indiana beat Michigan. They played Ohio State competitively for a half and then had some special teams blunders derail the whole game and they fell apart. Notre Dame beat them straight up. Great game. But, you know, some of these games, it gets a little interesting when you start to see, and by the way, it's still 16-0.
I just looked up Michigan, Alabama just scored.
Oh, they did? Okay. I don't have it on.
Literally a minute ago.
Yeah. I'm looking at a tracker. Yo, they sure did. 16-7 is the score close to halftime there, 4 minutes before the half. But yeah, I mean, I think there's still some cred to this. And there's some cred, by the way, it's a big game for Illinois in the Big Ten.
I mean, I would agree with Illinois. That's a big game for them, yes.
Illinois and South Carolina to an extent to show that they should have been let in. I think if you looked at Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina is clearly the best of the three. Alabama got flattened by Oklahoma, a team that ended up with a losing record. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky, who didn't have a Power Four win except at Ole Miss.
Yep.
And, of course, South Carolina had three pretty respectable losses.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So,
They should be motivated, and hopefully they will be. And, again, I don't want to make it out like all the bowl games are meaningless. They're not all meaningless, but too many of them are just because they're too many. And it's hard to create meaning for 94 teams.
No, I totally agree. There's something special about the NCAA tournament, but it's because there are a lot of teams involved all at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't really – nobody really – slams. Well, sometimes they slam the Cinderellas, but people like watching the Cinderellas make a run. The committee doesn't always agree.
Right.
They like to put some of the big names in there and reward them for a gauntlet of a schedule, but whatever the case may be. Let me skip ahead before we take a break here and switch topics. What about these college football playoff games? Who you got? I think Penn State, if I were betting on it, I might take Boise and the 11 points. I think that they're a pretty good team that could keep it respectable, but Penn State wins.
I have a hard time trying to figure out what Boise is, right? Because they played with Oregon early in the year. That was a field goal loss at Oregon. So they've shown that they can play with a big team like that, but they've only done it one time. Like, nobody since then has been really competitive that they've faced. So it's really hard for me to gauge whether or not they can come into this situation and handle it. But I think that your point about those 11.5 points, which is what I'm seeing in front of me right now, is a good one because, A, they should run the ball at least some. I don't think Gentry's going to run all over Penn State. They're too good. But he's going to run and he's going to, you know, they'll keep the game relatively close because they'll try to manage the clock. And Penn State's not an elite offense. You know, they can be weird sometimes offensively. So I'm with you. I'd say I think Penn State wins, but I think there's a really strong chance it's going to be closer than that 11.5.
The early game tomorrow, the Peach Bowl, is Texas against Arizona State. And that line has moved a little bit. It's now down to 12.
Yeah.
My gut tells me to take Arizona State plus 12, even though Texas is a superior team and the best defense they'll face by far. But I can't get over the fact that Arizona State absolutely throttled Iowa State. I mean, just throttled them in a game that mattered, the Big 12 championship. Texas should handle them pretty easily, but I'd be very tempted to take Arizona State plus 12. I just don't love 12. I like 14.5 better. Yeah. 12's a... Yeah. 12, I don't love.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say Texas wins. It's not a lock. Not a lock. Arizona State's played some decent competition at times this year. You mentioned the Iowa State game. But this is a step up from that. I mean, Texas is significantly better than anybody they've played. I'm just not sure I believe that Quinn Ewers is going to put up such a big number that it's going to be non-competitive. So I think Texas wins. If I were a betting man, though, Tom, I wouldn't touch this game.
Yeah, I
wouldn't touch it. If I had to, I would take the points because taking the points is just more fun. You got a little leeway there. You don't have to be as perfect. But I would, if I were a betting man, I would not be betting on this game.
Yeah, and the game's in Atlanta, and you're going to have every Texas fan there.
Yeah,
and, you know, they're going to flood the place. Arizona State will hardly have. But as Nick Saban always said, not one of those people in the seats are going to run a play in this game.
No, they're not. They're just going to make a lot of noise.
Yeah. But they will make some noise. What about Ohio State, Oregon? I mean, what a great, great game. The number one team in the country is a 2-point dog in this
one.
Kevin, I'll make my pick right now. I think Ohio State is a machine right now. They're motivated. I still, however, can't bet against the top team in the country plus 2. So I would take Oregon plus 2.
I do too. And look, I want to be really clear about, you know, my take on Ohio State. Like, they're really good, man. I mean, they played at Outson Stadium and lost by 1 point. And they lost by 1 point in part because their quarterback forgot how much time was on the clock and slid, and then the clock expired on the last play. So they didn't get their chance. Even though they had a timeout, they didn't get their chance for that last-second game-winning field goal. So that's how close that game was. And that was a road game for Ohio State, and it was a home game for Oregon. So I think this is definitely a coin flip. I mean, neither team should surprise you if they win. The Michigan game is clearly in the rearview mirror for this. But there are two things that I would say if I'm making a pick, which I'm going to because I'm not going to sit on the fence, is I'm going to pick Oregon because I think they have the better quarterback. And nothing against Howard. Will Howard's good. But I think Dylan Gabriel's better. And that's a tiebreaker to me. And I don't like how Ryan Day runs big games. I don't like his game management. He's a good overall coach. He's nowhere near the idiot that a lot of the Ohio State fans think he is. He's a good coach, but he has had problems in big games. He's had problems with clock management, with making adjustments on the fly and whether they make those adjustments quickly enough. And I think those kinds of things, if I'm looking at a tiebreaker, that's all I'm looking for, because I think these two teams are really neck and neck. So I'll go Oregon for those reasons, but it's still a coin flip. Ohio State could win this game.
Yeah, I like Lanning at Oregon. He's a real up and comer. Actually, he's established now. He's got himself quite a program, and I love his enthusiasm and love for the game. And by the way, secretly, Indiana fans are rooting for Ohio State for the same reason I just told you. To save face a little bit, get a little street cred. But either way, the Big Ten wins. What about Notre Dame, Georgia? Now, that's an obvious one for Indiana fans. I think they'll be secretly pulling for Notre Dame again to get a little street cred. But in Georgia, you know, Kirby Smart's run his mouth often about how they are superior and that kind of thing. He does it in a sort of classy way, I'd say. He's not a bad guy, but he is certainly confident about how Georgia can perform. With a new quarterback, though, can they beat Notre Dame? You talk about great defenses, a very, very good defense.
Yeah, this is the hard part for me is if you had a healthy Carson Beck, who I don't think is that great, by the way. I think he's been wildly overrated. Like, coming into the year, he was viewed as maybe a number one overall pick. He clearly played himself out of that conversation to the point now where draft gurus are saying he made a mistake coming out right now, coming off the injury and then a mediocre season for him. So you got a guy in Gunnar Stockton who has barely played. And he's going to be stepping out into the middle of this against a veteran. And again, when I'm looking, I think this game's close, like you're talking about. Obviously, Vegas agrees. It's a 1-point spread. So what are the tiebreakers? Well, one of them's quarterback. Would I like Riley Leonard or do I trust Gunnar Stockton? And I think Riley Leonard, who I don't think is that good, I think he's a better bet than Stockton right now. And if I look at the coaches, I actually favor Georgia. Like, I think Kirby Smart has proven himself in big games. I don't think Marcus Freeman has. I think he's had some big games where it didn't go well. So it's a coin flip. The 1-point spread tells the story. I'm going to pick Notre Dame because the real advantage is the experience at quarterback. And by the way, Tom, why do we do this? Why do we do this? The Gunnar Stockton steps in and all the people covering the game are like, this guy, he's a grinder. This guy drives a 1984, what is it? A Ford F-150. He's unique. Who cares? He's never played. That's the story with him. But he's at Georgia. So clearly he's talented. We know you're not at Georgia as a quarterback if you're not gifted. Right? I think we can all agree with that. I just don't like when we do all that nonsensical, oh, he's a grinder guy. He doesn't even have a new car in the age of NIL. Who cares? He's a talented guy because he's playing at Georgia. They don't recruit guys without talent. The real story is he hasn't played. That's it. And he might be great, man. I mean, remember when Tua stepped in for Jalen Hurts and lit it up? Like, Tua hadn't played really either, and he still did that. So Gunnar Stockton could set the world on fire, but he's the unknown today, or tomorrow, I should say.
I've got Notre Dame plus one as well. How about the fact that backup quarterback at Penn State said, see ya, I'm going to the portal during the playoffs.
Yeah,
that's Bo Fabula goes to Missouri.
To me, those are the only opt-outs or transfer things that are at least discussion worthy for me is when you're a playoff team, you know, because he could transfer out, commit and stay with Penn State for the rest of the semester. He can do that. And, you know, if something were to happen and Aller gets hurt, you're really damaging your teammates. You know, I think that's a fair discussion. I don't think it matters if a team or a player opts out of a game that's not a playoff game. Who cares? You know, if you're protecting your future earnings and your draft position, that's perfectly fine in a game that doesn't mean anything. But when these games matter, I think that's a knock. I think that's a knock on a guy. And maybe not like a damning knock where you're like, I'm done with this guy. But I can promise you that football evaluators will take note of that. They may not say you're done or write you off, but it's going to be on the negative side of your ledger.
It's the Gas House Gang from KMOX, Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman. By the way, the Rose Bowl is a national treasure, and I went to it this year for the first time. It is absolutely incredible. I mean, it is everything you wanted college football to be. It is the real deal when you're there in person, and I was so glad I got to see Indiana beat UCLA there. And will there ever be a Super Bowl there again? Highly, highly, highly doubtful. These games are now played and rewarded to teams who build these new NFL stadiums. Who will play in the Super Bowl this year? Your Detroit Lions impressed the heck out of me last night. They are banged up. They didn't even need that game, Kevin, but they went in and they beat the 49ers, and I was super impressed. Now, all of these games are going to have to be like that for them, aren't they? Shootout type games, including the Vikings. You're muted. We have to unmute Kevin somehow. He got muted, folks. I see it on his screen. I don't know how that happened. But I'll tell you what Kevin would say, and it's the first time we've rendered Kevin speechless. What Kevin would say is that his Lions team, he's excited about, but he's concerned about, because he thinks that the Vikings are the next team coming, and they've got all the pieces going right now, and they believe in Sam Darnold. Our producer, Drew Young, is urging Kevin to unmute his mic, and he doesn't know how. But I will say that the Lions-Vikings game just got really interesting, although it was already, because like I said, the Lions own the tiebreaker. So both of them at 14-2 will end up having to play each other now for not only the NFC North, but the whole enchilada, the home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So the road to the Super Bowl goes through either Detroit or Minnesota, Kevin, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, my browser just locked up. I was hitting the mute button like 100 times, and it wasn't doing anything. So I don't know what the heck that was.
Good thing I talk for a living.
Yeah, so. It's a good thing both of us can fill time, right? We can filibuster if we need to. So, yeah, I mean, like, we all know the things on the Lions. I mean, obviously I'm following it closer than most, but, you know, six of their week one defensive starters are on IR. And that doesn't even sum it up. I mean, you know, Hutchinson is one of the three best pass rushers in the NFL. And Aleem McNeil, people may not know his name, is probably one of the three or four best interior defensive linemen in the NFL right now. They're both out. All three of their initial starting linebackers from the beginning of the year are out. And a couple of the guys that stepped in for them are out. I mean, the guys that are playing linebacker for them right now are guys basically off practice squads and off the street. And they're playing major minutes, you know, big snap counts in important games. And you can see it's just tearing them up. I mean, there's somebody open within 2 seconds of every ball being snapped. And they have a secondary that's also banged up. They brought in Carlton Davis to be their number one corner. He's hurt. He's out with a jaw injury. The hope for them is win next week in a shootout, get the bye, and then maybe by the time you get back from the bye, Carlton Davis could be back and Alex Anzalone at linebacker could be back. But they're not getting most of these guys back. So, yeah, it's going to be on Jared Goff, and it's going to be on Jahmyr Gibbs. It sounds like David Montgomery might be back for the playoffs. So their offense is going to have to carry it. And if it doesn't, the good news is that, and by the way, how great is it that that Holmes, who was working in media relations essentially for the Rams when they were in St. Louis, is the guy running the Lions and just killing it in the draft every year and making smart pickups where they matter. I mean, that team's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, they're going to be good for a while. They're 2.5-point favorite, by the way, against the Vikings.
Really? Well, that's the home field. That's the home field. So they have less than the traditional home field goal advantage in that game.
Yeah, no, that's right. But that's going to be one heck of a game. I love when the regular season comes down to something like that, even though both teams will be in. It's a big advantage to have that home field. Anybody else in the NFC? I mean, if the Eagles get healthy, of course. I think the Rams, as much as I hate to say it, are playing really well in low-scoring type affairs, and their defense looks really solid.
Yeah.
Anybody else jump out at you?
Well, I mean, all of the teams in the North are scary. Mm-hmm. Vikings and Packers are obviously scary. Lions are scary. I think I'm not sure what I think of the Rams. You know, I thought their win against against Buffalo was really impressive. That was like a month ago, 4 weeks ago. But the other teams that they've beaten here lately are bad.
Yeah.
The Saints, the Niners, and the Niners wouldn't be bad, but everybody's hurt. So, but they're, and then in those games, they're in like the last three games, they haven't scored 20 points, 12, 19, and 13 against the Niners, the Jets, and the Cardinals. So I'm not sure that it's real, but they're a threat because they have a good coach and because they have a quarterback. But I would say the team that is maybe outside of this conversation that is unbelievably scary to me because of their rookie quarterback is Washington. Jaden Daniels is awesome. He's just so good. And that makes them, to me, a scary team to face in the first round. I think maybe later, too, but at least for the first round, whoever gets them is going to have no fun.
My preseason Super Bowl pick was Lions Bengals. It's still alive.
Yeah.
The Bengals need some help. They need the Dolphins to lose to the Jets, which could happen. They need the Broncos to lose to the Chiefs, which I don't think is going to happen because the Chiefs don't need it.
Yep.
And they're going to rest.
They're going to rest everybody. Well, which is a little interesting, right? Because now you're going to be off for 2 weeks. You know, I mean, I'm not saying don't do it because healthy is better than not rusty. I'd rather have rusty, healthy players than injured guys that aren't rusty, right? But it's interesting. And I would do it. I mean, I would rest my main guys. Like Patrick Mahomes would not be playing in that game if I were Andy Reid. So, you know, I would be very careful about a lot of things. And I think that's interesting, Tom, is the AFC to me is about two teams. I put the Ravens kind of like right after this, but to me it's Bills and Chiefs. It's Bills and Chiefs. My preseason Super Bowl pick was Lions and Chiefs, and it's very chalky, duh, because they were both favored. But I'm going to believe that the Chiefs are going to lose in the playoffs when somebody beats them. And look at them now. They're peaking. They're just now starting to figure it out. They've been playing like crap all year by their standard, and they're 15-1. They haven't even played well yet, and they're 15-1. And now Hollywood Brown is back, and the younger receivers have gotten more reps. And, you know, Xavier Worthy is at least found a niche where he can fit in. They're scary because that defense is real, and Patrick Mahomes doesn't blink, and they finally look like they're starting to get it together. And that's crazy to say about a 15-1 team. Like, when you're 15-1 and haven't even played what we would call your level of good football, that's pretty crazy.
Gashouse Gang on KMOX, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard air conditioning and heating dealer. Speaking of that, before we go here, how was your show with the big dog yesterday? The two of you back
time, man.
Again.
You know, so like Bernie and I, he's been in St. Louis forever. I didn't get here till 2006, but from 2006 until yesterday, the two of us had never done a four-hour show together. Wow. Even though we were teammates, we had back-to-back shows, and we would do a crossover every day. We never did. I think the most we ever did together was maybe a half an hour. And then Gas House Gangs, so 40 minutes, 45 minutes. But we did 4 hours together. It was a lot of fun, man. We did a lot of sports. We hit on a few non-sports things, which was kind of fun to kick around with Bern. I got Bernie's take on the state of St. Louis, like the city, not the sports. Just like what, you know, because he's a city resident. He's lived in the city for 40 years and he had some really interesting takes. And it was kind of cool to get Bernie outside of, you know, just the two of us talking sports because that's what we always do.
That's pretty cool. And I got to listen to you guys a little bit yesterday, but I'll have to go back on the podcast and listen to that on KMOX.com. Of course, the Gashouse Gang is always podcast. Few things we want to tell you about. One, we're podcast pretty much everywhere. So wherever you get your podcast, you're going to find us. Two is YouTube, I think, is the best subscribe right now. So you go to KMOX Sports to get all of these and more, but also the Bernie Show on YouTube to get Bernie's takes. He did, you know, a couple of things that I think were really cool just in almost in real time as news was breaking. Then he would come out with his take. So those are always a lot of fun. What do you got going on? Are you on after the Billikens game?
Yeah, it's me. DGS is me. It's only going to be about 90 minutes though. And you know, in radio time, 90 minutes is not even an hour in terms of talk time. Right. Cause we'll have news at the top and the bottom and we'll have traffic and weather and all of that. So, you know, it's going to be a quick 90 minutes. So whenever the Billikens game wraps up and Rammer gets done, interviewing Coach Schertz, and you know they wrap up the broadcast, I'll be jumping in and go until 5. And like Joe Pott's going to pop on with me because he's doing sports up online tonight, so we'll talk a little sports with Joe. But mostly, it's just going to be big mouth.
Hey, that's what we do.
Hey,
we
dude, I spent my whole life doing 3 and 4 hour solo shows. I think I can handle an hour and a half.
I used to listen to you overnights on Sporting News Radio.
Back in the day, boy. Yeah, back then, man. No guests, just, well, I will say this, though. Straight up open phone lines with full phone lines every night, all night was pretty cool.
I still remember the number, 800-777-2907.
907. You had to hear it from the way that Arnie Spanier said it. Because he would emphasize the two. He'd be like, 2-907.
Dude, great talking to you. Happy New Year. Have a great show today. Go Billikens, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Happy New Year, buddy. Hopefully we get some action in the Cardinals in 2025.
I know. That's a whole new show coming. Don't forget, tomorrow night we'll have a year in review, Gas House Gang edition, on what will be a very big day on the radio station, New Year's Day, with all of the New Year's specials. Don't forget to tune into the Gas House Gang edition of that. For Kevin Wheeler, I'm Tom Ackerman, and our producer, Drew Young. Happy New Year from KMOX.